Welcome to The Art Scene, brought to you each week by UALR Public Radio. This Sunday, the fourth in the 2014 Art Scene Summer Series, closes the program till September. And my guest today is Bob Ford, Artistic Director for Theatre Squared, T2 for short, the Northwest Arkansas Repertory Theatre based in Fayetteville. The T2 14-15 season opens August the 28th, so is one of the first of a cornucopia of treats awaiting us. He and I talked earlier this month, just a few weeks after Bob brought the 2014 Arkansas New Play Festival to Little Rock. The visit sponsored by Arkansas Rep, performing in Rep's Black Box Theater. I had missed the event, much to my chagrin. New plays and playwrights with live audience participation are a heady mix. So we touched on that first. Did it go well?
Exceptionally well in every way. Up here, when we came back from Little Rock, we did another 4 or 5 days, the plays in workshop, and each of the plays moved along.
Did the trial run in Little Rock help?
It helps a lot. The writers are already alert to the knowledge that they will have an audience, an astute audience, looking at the work. So they work very hard in that first week. And then, as I have observed in the past, whenever you have a reading, you learn a lot, and it's usually too bad because you can't put it right back into the workshop. But in this case, we designed it so they could. So they went back into rehearsals, continued rewriting.
You had a good audience down here, did you?
We had a pretty good audience for two of the plays and a just fine audience for two of the plays.
It was difficult coming the weekend when they just opened the main stage show, too.
Exactly.
Just a question of when you come around with a new play festival. Do you wait until you've got your new season announced before you really start digging in on the new play festival?
That's been the way it's been, just because it takes so much focus to work on the season selection. We knew who the playwrights were and basically what they were going to be working on. But I always like to give notes and feedback to the playwrights before they get here, so they maybe start working on it before they even arrive. And that I was not really able to get down to until after our season announcement.
Yeah.
Here's what does happen is, as we're putting together the season and we discover things that we wish we could do, maybe we wish we could be premiering, we're premiering one of my plays, but you know, maybe we wish we could be premiering a play by an Arkansas playwright, or we wish we had developed a play that we could premiere, or we're looking for a play that has live music in it. That definitely influences the way we look at the festival, because the festival is the one place where we have the most deliberate control over, you know, working on a piece that might be good, that our audience might love.
Now, your actual season for this 14-15 year, 5 shows. Have you always had 5 shows, or are you have so many ideas tempted to go to 6?
Up until last season, we've had 4 shows.
Oh, okay.
In the first couple of years, when we did theater for young audiences, every other play was a TYA play and then an adult play. We did 5 shows, I think, in the first couple of seasons. When the children's theater split off, we just did 4 plays. And then last season, we decided to try 5. And now we're hooked. So, I mean, if we wanted to see if we could pull it off. It basically, are we really ready to do a nonstop push starting in August, going all the way through June?
Yeah.
And we do that. Because it is, when one play is up, the other one is in production when you have 5 plays.
Yeah.
And also, we wanted to see if our audience was interested in seeing that much theater. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but especially looking back, because they definitely were.
Yes, because we talked about audience participation before and how great they've been in your part of the world. So it's encouraging that when you do add another show, that they're right there for you. Now, of the shows, the only brand new you've just mentioned is your world premiere, Look Away. Of the others, I was trying to figure out the brand new. You've got one. How new is the Superior Donuts?
Superior Donuts was on Broadway, I wish I could tell you exactly, 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
So it is, and it is the latest play by Tracy Letts, whose play, August Osage County, was a huge sensation and then was turned into a movie. So he wrote this play after that, or at least it was hit New York, Chicago, and then New York after that play. So it's pretty new. It's in that area, in that category. Theater Squared likes to try to do some plays that are fairly fresh. It wasn't there last year.
Okay.
But it's in that recent category. And then, of course, One Man, Two Governors was just there. The rights for that just became available.
And that governor, is that the sort of nickname that you give a boss? Rather
exactly.
than actually,
yep.
yeah.
It's the British term, yeah. You know, hello, Governor.
Yeah.
Top of the morning to you, Governor. That's exactly it. And it's an adaptation of the Goldoni Commedia dell'arte classic, The Servant of Two Masters. So you can see, you know, one man, two masters, basically.
Yeah. Now, is it written by a British writer?
It is. It's written by Richard Bean, who is with this play, and now he's got another one. I noticed just opened at the National in London, based on the scandals around the Rupert Murdoch's paper over there.
The hacking.
Cell phone hacking.
Yes, yes.
Another big comedy that was well reviewed by the New York Times, but it's still over in London. But this guy's becoming quite a major playwright, and he writes his own work, but then he also does these brilliant adaptations. And One Man, Two Governors has actually been called by the Daily Mail over there the funniest show in the Western world. and it is. It's screamingly funny and very smart.
And I know that's your goal every season, is to start with a laugh-out-loud comedy and put the audiences in the right mood for the rest of the year.
Exactly, yep. And this is really hits that sweet spot. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a huge play for us. It's really quite a stretch. It has 11 actors, more actors than we have ever put on our stage.
Will you have room for them?
Also has a four-piece skiffle band.
Wow, that goes back.
Yes, yeah. So you've remember this term.
Oh, yes.
I don't remember ever hearing of it, but yeah, it's like a kind of a Beatles-esque, an early Beatles-sounding band. The play is set in 1963 in Brighton, England.
Ah, sounds right.
yeah, it's a really fun play. That would be a great one to come up for.
Oh,
it'll put you in a very happy mood, and you'll have fun because it's very, very British, although it translates really well.
You'll need the translation.
Yeah.
So then you're following this with David Auburn's Proof. Now, he's a Little Rock writer, isn't he?
He is. I don't know. I think it's been a long time since he's lived here, but he's an Arkansas boy who went off to Juilliard and wrote this play that won a Pulitzer and a Tony.
Yes.
And a Drama Desk Award. It is one of the most brilliant plays, I think, in the last 20 years.
I know. I did an interview with him about that before it came to Little Rock. And he said that all he knew about theater he owes to the Arkansas Arts Center's Children's Theater that he worked in when he was a student in Little Rock.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah, we should probably try to get a hold of him. I haven't actually reached out to him just to let them know that we're doing, you know, another Arkansas theater is doing his play. It's a beautiful piece, and it's nicely sandwiched between two very, you know, very crowd-pleasing type plays.
What you're saying is that you don't need to use a lot of brain power to enjoy the first one and the third one.
Exactly, yeah. I think your brain will be delighted, but it won't be taxed. And really, you know, Proof is also a very emotionally driven play. Mm-hmm. It is not, it's not like you have to screw up your forehead and try to figure out what's going on. It's a beautifully told story. It's not, and it has a lot of comedy in it, but it's more of a straight-ahead drama.
Now, the Christmas show, Around the World in 80 Days, it says a new adaptation. What do you do with something like that that's sort of part of history?
This piece is owes a lot to the 39 Steps phenomenon. This playwright, adapter, has done several adaptations of classics, especially like 19th century classics. And he just did one of Tom Jones, actually, that premiered down in Florida at the Florida Studio Theater. And in fact, the director who premiered that for Mark down there is going to be coming up to direct Around the World in 80 Days. So it works because it has five actors playing dozens of roles and having to invent, you know, how do you get an elephant on stage? We're obviously not going to have an elephant. So it delights through its invention, its theatrical invention. It delights through the virtuosity of seeing these actors play many, many roles, take us to many, many locations, and it's kind of nonstop delightful in that way. Even though many of us will remember how it ends, and the sort of delightful twist that happens at the end. So yeah, that's a sort of again one of those things that I think you're enjoying on the virtuosic level, as well as on just the storytelling level.
Well, when you say you've got a cast of 11 in the first show that challenges your space, what about Around the World in 80 Days? It sounds as though you've got twice 11 people going to be coming on and off.
Well, it's five actors playing all those people.
Ah.
So, yeah, no. So it is that quick change. That sense of, well, I know darn well that guy just walked off as one character and has come right back on as the other, but it was done so smoothly. It's that smooth transition and pulling it off that adds to the pleasure of watching the piece.
So it's not as frenetic. Yeah. It's not as frenetic as the complete works of Shakespeare abridged.
Yeah, I don't think it's got that same. It's not as frenetic as that, but it is. It's still playing on that same kind of virtuosity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we would do. I'm doing this play. We chose this play because it has the added element of five actors playing many, many roles. If we were to do it with 20 actors, I don't think it would be as fun.
Yeah,
might be wrong, but certainly in our space, you wouldn't be able to do. If you were to doing it. With an gorgeous huge theater that could do all this magic and truly bring us to these different places, I think that would be delightful. But this kind of piece is really suited to our small 178-seat theater.
And as you say, when they're all up close and personal in terms of where they sit at the footlights, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Bob Ford, Artistic Director of Theatre Squared from Fayetteville, is my guest, taking us through the new season's choices. Now, your new play, where have you been working on this? Have you had that in the new play festival at all?
It was in the new play festival. In fact, we did it when the new play festival was kicked off 6 years ago when we applied for a grant from the Arkansas Heritage, it's not foundation, Department of Arkansas Heritage. They actually put out a request for proposals, and this is how we kicked off the festival. Applied for a grant and said, we're going to commission four plays either by Arkansas playwrights or about Arkansas. They all have to, in fact, have something to do with Arkansas. And we commissioned me to write this play about a story that I heard that was taken from an oral history that was in turn taken by Jeannie Wayne, who's a historian on the faculty here at the university. And one of her great sort of life projects has been to investigate and write about the Wilson Company, which was a huge plantation up in northeastern Arkansas. And I remember very distinctly hearing the broad outlines of her research, and I said, hey, what do you have any stories that might make good plays? And she told me three right off the bat, and this was the one that really grabbed me.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very much based on an actual event, and then we bring in several members of the Wilson family back in the 30s and kind of tell the story that is, you know, one represents one of those dark chapters from our.
So is it a tragedy?
Pardon?
Is it a tragedy?
It's not a tragedy. It doesn't necessarily end badly, but it reveals an ugliness.
Mm-hmm.
And that is endemic, you know.
Or 1930s.
It's a human weakness, and I don't want to say that it's a Southern one, but in this rendition, it's one of those things that you see in the South. You know, where this comes from is I am a Northerner, and I knew appallingly little about this, about Southern history, and I have become hugely fascinated by it. What an amazing, complex history we have.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the history of, you know, of race relations in the South is incredibly dramatic and, yes, tragic, but also filled with hope. And this story is about a couple of guys who are caught, a couple of African-American teenagers who are caught with a couple of white girls, and a lynch mob starts to form, but not before they have been able to escape to the Wilson house, the big house, because one of the boys' mothers is the head housekeeper there. And he feels that in this kind of life or death emergency, this is his best bet is to get there and plead his case to the big man, Roy Wilson, the owner of the company and the head of that family at the time, and that if he can just plead his case to Mr. Wilson, then Mr. Wilson will has the power to call off this lynch mob. And so the play takes place in the course of that night, all in the kitchen of the Wilson family, and ultimately he does indeed get to plead his case before Mr. Wilson, who comes down in the morning for breakfast. But we get to meet these two other just fascinating historical characters, one of whom was Roy Wilson's sister Marie, who was actually became a Manhattan socialite, and so we've got her back in the house that night. And then one of the boys grew up with Roy's son Bobby, and they were playmates when they were little kids. And then of course Bobby went off to Yale, and his name's Alonzo is the boy. Stayed behind, and so he's there as well.
Mm-hmm.
That night. And
so that must have been quite a challenge for you to write it, not exactly in the vernacular, but taking it from the deep history of the Deep South in the well-established Depression countrywide, but differently exposed in the South.
Yes.
To make sure that it rang true.
Yeah, and I had Jeannie Wayne look at it, and she's helped a lot. She was very tolerant of poetic license. I asked, is it at all possible that Bobby the son and Marie the sister might have been in the house? Because, of course, dramatically, what a great thing, and she said, yeah, sure, why not? I think that is definite poetic license, however, and there might be somebody who would go, well, that would not have happened. And there also are going to be folks who may question the way I have characterized these actual people, these actual historical people.
Mm-hmm.
Because same thing there, I'm using a lot of license to make this story happen, to go for a greater truth, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The basic elements of the story are true, and the characters, as I've written them, are based on some things that we know about them. So I feel just fine about it. It's what we do. It's what playwrights do. And then there will be folks who will, there are things that we're all going to overlook, and someone's going to go, well, they didn't have that kind of refrigeration back then, or they'll, these are the kinds of things that always sneak up on me. Or somebody will say, you know what, I knew Bobby and he never would have done that.
Ooh.
That's the kind of thing that,
yeah,
that's a playwright's nightmare. But also, as we discovered with Dis Farmer in the new play festival, I think his name is Kim Davis, wrote a biography of Dis Farmer after Werner Trishman wrote this play, and he came to see the play. And I know Werner had to do a lot of
rewriting.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Davis said, no, that's great. No, I think you're fine. So it's always tricky when you do this.
Yeah.
I'm aware of that, and I'm reliant on Jeannie Wayne to kind of say, you're fine. Don't worry about it.
That's great. Now, the last play, then, is Superior Donuts, which makes you think it's going to be another comedy. But the brief little bit of information, it's got a challenge by the sound of it.
It's got a, it is a, you know, I use the word crackling. It is a crackling good drama. And there is not a crackling good drama I know of that does not have a lot of laughs in it.
Mm-hmm.
It is, that's where the crackling part comes. It's just filled with comic takes on. Ultimately, it's a it's a drama about a man coming to grips with his previous inability to step up and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
In this play, that is challenged. But ultimately, it's a lovely play that is filled with hope. I'm looking at a quote right across from me on the bulletin here that says, a source of comic bliss. I love what reviewers do. And which reminds me, it is very, very funny. But ultimately, it's what I love about the piece is the way it's very dramatic, very high drama. This gets some.
So it has
got a good fight scene in it. Mm-hmm. And,
it's a sort of play that the comedy has the potential for drama, but the drama is also ready to give a laugh at the right time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we all know, is Shakespeare above all.
Yeah.
Knew. If you don't get him laughing at some point, you're going to lose them.
Now, when you put the season together, you and Martin, do you have a few, or like a short committee, like your wife, for example, who are listening to some of the plays that you are looking at? So of these five, you must have had at least 12 that you had narrowed down to.
Oh, yeah. No, we're and I will say, yes, Morgan Hicks and Amy Herzberg and Martin and I. And then there's a sort of a group beyond, a group of very close artistic associates, people that we work with, that I run this by even as we're going along and say, what do you think? How does this sound? So, and ultimately, ultimately I'm the arbiter of this process, and that's sort of, it's ultimately going to fall to one person, unless you're just completely, I mean, sometimes, very occasionally, there's a total consensus, but usually there's, I'm having to kind of decide. And in the case of Look Away, I kind of stepped back and
you can't be too heavy-handed.
Martin might have sort of made the case for that. We wanted to premiere something, and this one was we felt was ready. So, but I didn't really push it. I don't feel comfortable with that. So, but yeah. Otherwise, however, you know, it's I'm arbitrating and relying very heavily and really pushing back on the points of view of Amy and Morgan and Martin. It's very, yeah, it's, well, we've talked about this before. It's,
well, it's one
very
of the
difficult
things, yeah.
And then when it has always fallen into come to a place where we, where it suddenly feels like the sum is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And that's what happened with this. And I think that may have happened when One Man, Two Governors became available.
Yes.
And that happened quite late in our process, and that it changed several of the plays that we were looking at. The play like One Man, Two Governors, that has this just wonderful sense of comedy, and then also Around the World in 80 Days, that's just pure fun, kind of allows you to put something in that's going to take you to a darker place, like Look Away.
No, it sounds as though you've got a very good balance this year.
I think so. You know, we'll see as it transpires. But yeah, thank you. We're really quite pleased with it.
That was Bob Ford, artistic director of T2 Theatre Squared in Fayetteville. Their 2014 season opens August the 28th with One Man, Two Governors by Richard Bean. For tickets and more information, call 479-443-6333. Or visit online at theatre2.org. The art scene will be off the air in August, returning September the 7th as the 2014-15 season gets underway. My grateful thanks to all the staff at UALR Public Radio. None of them escapes my cries for help when I fall into yet another Microsoft quicksand. Most particularly William Wagner, Ben Fry, Nathan Vandiver, and Karen Stewart of the technical staff, while Benita Norwood and the recently retired Mary Waldo have kept their feet on the ground and UALR Public Radio on the air. While to you, my listeners, thank you for listening, and I hope you will join me in September.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR Public Radio.